You're listening to the Geek Legacy Escape Pod.
The crew coming together and gelling and becoming this, like, you know, intergalactic family that we know and love.
And wacky mayhem ensues.
It just feels like they're trying so hard to capture the fans of the original series.
Yeah, that was hot garbage.
He just got, like, weird, like, creepy uncle weird.
That was a bold choice.
Yeah, I had fun with it.
That's true. It was the 80s.
It must be so bad that they just never rewrite.
You won't make it in the future, do you?
I don't think so, no.
I am not a Tosh ER fan. That's probably the nicest thing I will say.
That is absolutely perfect way to describe it.
Yeah.
Red alert! Geek boys and girls, it's time for Geek Legacy's Escape Pod. We are embarking on episode number, looks like 14, on Star Trek The Next Generation. So for those of you who are just joining us for the first time, what we do every week is we revisit old episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation chronologically from the very beginning. And we are 14 episodes into this thing. We're midway through season one. And we're just trying to figure out which ones are good, which ones aren't. And so far, I gotta say, it's looking a little bleak. We, of the first 13 episodes, we've got 8 nays and only 5 yays. So it's not looking too good here. We know it gets better as it goes, but, when does that start? So my faithful sidekicks on this adventure, cause you gotta bring people along on an adventure like this, cause you'll go crazy if you try to do it by yourself. I have one Mr. Justin Cavender. How you doing?
I am fabulous, Randy. Thank you.
I've also got David Edmondson at Bandai Dave for those of you who follow him on the Twitter.
Reporting for duty. Can't wait to talk about 01101011001.
Yeah. What, so that's a hell of an episode, man.
What a fucking dumb title. I get it. They're binars, binary 0101. That's just it's a dumb title. It's a lazy title, and it's just dumb. Yeah. like I don't even know the name of the title. I know it's got O's and ones. If I had to guess, yeah, it's 01110111, but I could be totally wrong, and I think that they could have had a much better title.
It reminds me of IT Crowd with the 911 call.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like 01189999811997253.
Well, they were at least trying to be funny. They knew what they were doing. These Star Trek folks, they don't got it figured out yet. Yeah.
So this episode is actually titled 11001001. That's the official
so
title.
Close, so 3. Close.
And it aired February 1st, 1988. And it was directed by Paul Lynch, who also directed the second episode, The Naked Now, which was the very first yay episode that we rated of this entire season. Right. So we got a return director on this. So that's kind of exciting, right? Yeah. So let's see what it was rated on IMDb. This one was 7.5. This is one of the higher rated episodes of the season. So that's also exciting. The quick little blurb says the Enterprise docks at a starbase for repairs where it is commandeered by a race of technologically linked aliens intent on using the vessel for their own purposes. I think we nicknamed them technosexuals when we were when we were hyping this episode at the end of last week's.
You know, so. Rook, I got to say that the space station looked gorgeous. Like when the Enterprise was pulling in, I was like, holy shit, this was like their budget for the entire season. It looked legit amazing. I was blown away at the visual effects for that. And then the little thing where Geordi's driving and then Riker's like, go ahead and drop anchor or whatever the fuck. And then Picard's like, well done, number one. And Geordi's like, the fuck? I'm the one parking this thing.
Yeah, it was very much the space station that they used for Star Trek 3 and Star Trek 4, and but yeah, it looked great because it was a film prop probably or a film piece, but
that
yeah,
makes sense.
It looked really really good, and I was like, oh, got a chance here,
got some budget.
it looked gorgeous. I mean, it could be on today, and I would have been all right. That looks great, and moved on.
Yeah, but I totally caught on to the. great job, number one. I'm like, what the fuck did he do?
And it wasn't just once. He complimented him like three times in the span of 5 minutes. I'm like, what the hell did he even just do? Is there like a deleted scene where Riker actually did something?
Yeah, and I thought for sure we were going to get a threesome in that holodeck with those two fucking guys. Picard was awful nice to everyone. He almost wasn't a dick to Wesley Crusher in this episode. I mean, he was more curt with him than everybody else, but I didn't think his presence just wanted to make Picard murder himself. So that was good.
Yeah, that was kind of refreshing. It was nice to see him actually be nice to Wesley for a change and not just to be a general dick to the crew. Even though he could have been, considering he was duped. He and Riker were duped so easily by a pretty lady in the holodeck.
Right, didn't take much.
Yeah. So seriously.
I mean, they are sailors. They're away from port a long time.
Oh, I know. And notice how Riker just like sinks right into it, like a duck to water. He just takes right to that. Oh, so this is how we're doing this now. This is how Riker's going to be getting his action now. All right, I'm into it. Oh, you know,
and he was too. He was 100% okay to have sex with that computer program.
Yeah, he was even talking about like, yeah, I could fall in love with this woman, you know, and Picard's sitting there right next to him going, yeah, I can see that.
You're a good looking guy, Will. You could do better. Yeah.
She was saying what he wanted her to say as he was thinking it. You know, it was very advanced and everything was just, you know, it was literally the perfect date. And hopefully all of us have been on a perfect date before. And it really is a magical experience. And the night just doesn't end. If you're at a restaurant, the people that are working there are trying to kick you out because they're like, the fuck, leave our building now. And he was having that moment. And so I thought that was pretty cool. I was digging that.
Yeah, it was fun to see Riker perform with the band and, you know.
On his bone.
On his bone. Which he very clearly wasn't playing. Blow daddy. But
I'm like, I'm like, what could a bone be? And then if I see the trombone, I'm like, oh, it's literal. You're like, an axe or something like that.
A blonde wouldn't be caught dead in a jazz bar. Maybe something more sultry.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they're having some serious issues with the holodeck. Between the detective episode that we had and just other random little issues. And it is kind of fun to see because you do get a little bit of exposition dialogue in this one. Talking about how, the holodeck was pretty much just for, like, landscapes and ski slopes and that kind of thing. And now it's actually capable of generating...
Whores.
Really intelligent AI. Well, I wasn't going to go quite there with it, but like AI characters that can read not your thoughts, but your inputs, you know.
Right, can anticipate what you're going to say.
They can anticipate. Yeah, because they're like human body language is like, you know, if you look at all these little things, we're always giving off signals. And that if a computer knows how to read that, that can be input to help gauge their response to you. So that's how, you know, that Minuet character was able to essentially read Riker's mind, and to be fair, it didn't need much reading. You know, you know what he's there for.
I love that Picard explains that all to us, and Riker's like, "Way to murder my boner, Captain."
Right. Yep, but you know what? It didn't even though he was just like, "Yeah, you know what? I don't care. Keep talking. I'm not too proud.
I'll do this shit while you watch, Captain."
Yeah, he's like, "I'll even make eye contact. I don't care."
You want to see why they call me number one?
Oh man!
But, I mean, this was what 1987, right?
88.
Yeah. Okay. 88. So, I mean, it is pretty cool to see this 30 years ago idea of the future, and you know, we're pretty much like on the cusp of something like this happening. You know, we have all these crazy algorithms and the idea of artificial intelligence and computers doing all this work for us. This isn't a stretch. By any means, it's pretty crazy.
Yeah, I'm sure in '88 the Star Trek Virgin nerds were like, "Oh my god, the future is going to be so great! I'm going to get a Minuet."
Yeah, and you might. I mean, Randy's talking about his VR software that's blowing his mind over there. So I mean, VR is essentially a holodeck, right? But we're getting there. It's almost a thing. It's I mean, VR has been around for for several years, you know, the multiple decades, probably three decades now, four decades, and is still very much in its infancy. But the leaps and bounds that it's making in that infancy is through the roof. It is nuts to see where we're at with VR, and sooner or later we are going to have this holodeck in our own living rooms, and it's fucking nuts, dude.
Yeah, right now, if you need to get your rocks off through VR, there, I've seen on the internet that there is this company, and I want to say it's based out of Japan, that is developing like this apparatus that you can put on your hands, and it makes it feel like you're touching tactile things. And there's also this thing; it's kind of almost like a fleshlight, but you put it on your junk, and then it'll like move and vibrate and do things, and it'll like coordinate with what you're doing in this VR like porn game kind of thing. So it's almost like you can actually live into some degree this VR sexual experience where you actually do feel something and you do finish, you know.
Right. I'll mean that tin anonymity like Randy and pretend that it wasn't me, but they also have this thing where it's like you as the male have like Randy said, like a fleshlight that you like attach around like with a belt. And then your female partner has a phallic looking counterpart, and whatever you guys do to the individual things, the other person feels.
Like theoretically, you're on the other side of the planet from each other, and you're communicating. Yeah, via like this VR session over the internet, basically, and you could be there, like you're face to face with each other. You can look at each other, and in a way, through this technology, feel each other.
Okay, so I like where this is going, but for me personally, there's just too many parts involved and apparatuses. I would need like a Jordy visor is what I'm going for. You know, like something to where I just need to put one thing on and I'm good to go. I don't want 600 cables everywhere. I don't want to charge shit. I don't want to be tethered, I think is a good word. I don't want to be tethered to anything other than just some sort of a visor. Then that is when I am ready for VR. Once the cables are gone and the devices are gone, then I'm good.
But how are you going to feel anything on your pee-pee?
I mean, I feel like
got to use your hands. It's your like brain is toy.
Your brain is pretty powerful, man. So
that's true.
That's what I'm getting at. I don't want to have to strap anything on. I just want like to put on some like sunglasses.
Stranger Days type thing.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm all for that.
The VR stuff that, you know, it's a lot more low tech or not as advanced in terms of graphics. But the stuff that you can do like through cell phones, like they have those little headsets you can strap a smartphone into, and then kind of you can look around, you can do all the things. You know, it doesn't have a super powerful graphics card running, you know, the best looking simulation in the world, like a big old computer with a tether running to your headset would, but that's probably the most mobile way to do it. And I'm not going to say with any certainty from personal experience that it exists, but there's VR porn out there, or at least like shot with a 360 degree camera, to where if you were wearing such a smartphone apparatus, you could look around and feel like you're, you know, a part of it.
Or if you have a PSVR, you know, I'm not saying.
There you go. Yeah.
Is that big on the PSVR?
I'm just saying.
I have Edmondson house.
I can neither confirm nor deny the existence of a PSVR in my household.
Sure. But I mean, if I like, you know, I don't want to go to, let's say, like I hate hiking, but I like the idea of camping in the wilderness without bears fucking attacking me. If I could put on a device and all of a sudden, man, I'm transported to the Alps or something like that, and I'm able to have like this cool trip, whereas otherwise I haven't even left my living room. It's the weekend. I have 2 days where I'm not working, and I can just have some sort of total recall vacation experience. I think that would be pretty fucking cool.
That would be, and I'll do you one better. Fast forward, you know, 40 years, and
always
you're
the one over.
You're 80 years old. You're infirmed. You're in the hospital. You haven't got much time left, but damn it, you wish you could, you know, take one last camping trip or one last, you know, climb up the Alps or something like that. You know, take technology like this into like a convalescent home or something like that and put it on elderly people who can't, who aren't mobile, who can't get out there and see these things that they may remember from their youth. You bring it to them in like a virtual reality environment. And, you know, that might be the next best thing to be in there, especially for somebody who doesn't have the mobility to go.
I just see a kid giving their grandpa like a VR headset. And the grandpa's, I just want to be together with my friends from the war again. And the kid thinking he's like some war hero, and then all of a sudden he's in like Nazi Germany or something like that. Oh my god, Dad was a Nazi. My grandpa's a Nazi.
He's gonna be like, that's cute, but where's the porn stuff?
Yeah, exactly. That's where I thought it was gonna go. I didn't think it was gonna go the Nazi route. I was like, yeah. All right, now shut up, kid. Now show me where the porn is on this thing.
Yeah. Right. Where's that device I heard about where I have one thing here and lady in 2C's got the other part.
Right.
Exactly.
Well, people like porn too, man. When I worked at Staples and people brought in their computers with viruses and stuff, you know, this guy would just whip out his laptop, he'd be like, Travis, it's broken again. And then he'd flip it up and then there would just be just horrible things happening on the screen because this guy didn't know how to close. He didn't understand that X in the top right corner of a browser meant close. It was always a treat whenever this guy brought in his computer.
How great that he felt close enough to you to where he didn't feel embarrassed.
Yeah, he was over it. He's past that. It's like when you get married, you don't really care about what clothes you're wearing anymore. You're like, this doesn't even really match, but I don't care. I'm over it. That happens. Anyway, yeah. Back to Star Trek.
Yeah, let's Randy. Get back to those binars. Like, okay. So a pet peeve of mine in science fiction is like lazy naming or lazy, just like world building. Having a binary race of techno aliens called Binars and their planet called like Binaris or whatever, something like that. It's just like it's low hanging fruit for the picking. It just seemed too easy. It felt a little cheesy to me, to be honest.
Sure. It's like He-Man naming conventions, right? This guy looks like a beast. He's Beastman. This guy looks like a skeleton. He's Skeletor. This is how they do shit. This guy's got a big fist. His name is Fisto. It's the same thing. People are just tired. Naming is like the hardest fucking thing. And it's funny you mentioned it. That's a pet peeve because anytime I ever wrote a story, I struggled so fucking hard with names. It's just not something I am capable of doing. I can't name names.
They name names, man.
Whenever I start writing a new story, like if I don't have names in my mind, I swear to you, I will spend like the entire first day as I'm like writing an outline or starting the script, looking at like baby names websites and stuff like that, just like scrolling for like all these different names and like, oh, this is what it means in Greek or Latin or whatever. Or this is what the root of the name comes from. Like I spend way too much time researching names, and then I'll usually just end up defaulting it to be like, yeah, I knew a guy named Clint once.
Right. Clint Rockwell, what a dick.
Yeah. Maybe they had the same moment with the binary. What were they called?
Binars.
Yeah, I wasn't bothered so much by the names, and I was like I get it. Let's just speed through this shit. Okay, I get it. Yeah, they're binars. You know, they're like those nerdy alien guys from Just One of the Guys in the 80s. You know, they can't be more than like 2 feet from each other. They're sort of like,
But what Huey, Dewey, Louie thing going on?
Yeah, you know, one thing that I've learned going through this Next Generation rewatch is that I love Riker, I love William Riker, and the first like third of this episode was just, you know, everyone had like a plan of what they were going to do, and Riker's just like, something will come up, I'll figure it out, and then like we see him like interact with like the entire like all these people in the crew, and like so he gets with Wesley, and Wesley's kind of like intrigued by these binars, and. And like he puts Wesley in charge, he's like, "Hey, you're in charge." And you can tell like that means like the world to Wesley Crusher. Like, yeah, it's really in essence a shit job because he's like the low ensign on the totem pole. So it would be his job to like babysit, but he takes such pride in it. And then he goes and he meets with Data, and Data's like trying to learn how to paint, and he makes the cool line about, "Well, this will be in a book someday." And like, what? It's a blind guy teaching a robot how to paint. Now someone's got to be interested in it. And he has a moment with Crusher. He has a moment with Picard, and he even has an exchange with Tasha Yar and Worf, where he's talking about, it's just have fun. And he's like, if winning is not the most important thing, why would we keep score? Right. He's like, I don't know.
And then Yara's like, don't worry, he's developing a sense of humor. He was just pulling your chain or whatever.
Yeah, so yeah. I just dug the thought of like Riker just like strolling through the ship, just be like, something will come up. And then, of course, you know, something came up.
Yeah. We know what came up.
Yeah.
His trombone. Little Will.
His trombone. His bone.
His bone.
So, yes, I really liked the interplay between, Riker and the crew. It was fun to see them not in, like, they're always in dire situations, always DEFCON 5 and Red Alert and all of this nonsense. And it was fun to have just kind of, like, a slower character moment. And like we mentioned earlier, Picard wasn't a total dickhead to everybody for once.
Do you guys notice that the commander from the space station was like a total Picard clone, but with a beard? They had a very similar body type, like the same male pattern baldness from behind. I'm like, wait, what? Why are there two Picards? You know, it, like just out of the corner of my eye. I'm like, what's going on here?
If you told me they shot a pilot to the Next Generation and had to recast Jean-Luc Picard, and this was the original Jean-Luc Picard, I'd be like, yeah, that tracks.
He actually just died. Gene Dynarski, he died on February 27th of 2020. So, just over a year ago. Yeah.
Was he known for being in a bunch of other stuff?
Well, I knew him from Seinfeld.
Oh, shoot.
But I immediately recognized him when I saw him.
So, fun fact. I know him from. Yeah, I'm looking at his filmography here. He was in an episode of the original series, 1966, Mudd's Women. That was the episode name he was in. Oh, shit. He was in Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea, Star Trek, the original series, The Mark of Gideon, another character from the original series, Airport 1975, Earthquake, Close Encounters. He was in Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
That movie sucks.
It's long. It doesn't, how you say, get to the point right
or
away.
Get good.
And it's got a terrible ending. Like, Sir Richard Dreyfuss just, like, leaves his wife and kids to go to, like, another planet.
Yeah, like, got a calling, man.
But he never, like, explains it to him. Like, he just, like, leaves.
The heart wants what the heart wants, Dave.
Yes, and his heart, all of a sudden, you know, he gets, like, this, like, flashlight and hears, like, a dun, 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 dun. And now he's just gonna like.
That's leave Riker playing his bone to get him up onto the ship.
I guess. Yeah, that's not a good movie, but it had to be made so we could get the greatest movie in E.T.
So turns out the Bynars are a bunch of hijacking sons of bitches. They trick Riker and kind of accidentally Picard, but it works because they're both kept occupied by the lovely lady Minuet inside of the holodeck just long enough for basically these enhancements, these improvements they're supposed to be making to the ship. They kind of like sabotage it and make it look like the magnetic field around the warp core is about to give out or something like that. So it was like a mandatory, holy shit, we got to evacuate the ship. So everybody evacuates except for Riker and Picard, which are still inside the holodeck, but nobody knows that. And then the Bynars just like steal the ship and program it to go home to their home planet. And they end up fucking like dying on the way there. And thankfully, Riker and Picard figure out what's going on and get out of the holodeck and beam their way onto the bridge to find the almost dead, soon to be corpses of these Bynars. And then they have to go through this whole process to figure out why it's going back to their home planet. Then when they get there and they find out that there's no signs of life on the home planet either. And the, like this big master control computer that's supposed to be kind of like the almost like a queen or the hive mind of these Bynar aliens that's keeping them alive is dead. And the reason why they had to steal the Enterprise is because it was the only hard drive big enough to carry to back up like their entirety of the knowledge on their planet so that they could essentially like reboot their master computer on the planet. It was kind of contrived. I mean, I guess all this is, but
where Picard's like, we don't know what we're getting into. Let's blow up the ship.
Yeah. Well, I did forget about the fact that they immediately set it to as soon as they get out of the holodeck, they're like, well, we're under control of hostile alien forces. We have no choice but to set it to self-destruct.
It had to be 5 minutes. Like, you couldn't give yourself a little more time?
But when they get to the bridge and then they realize what's going on, they were able to turn off the self-destruct. It seems like every sci-fi you ever see or anything that involves self-destruct, whether science fiction or set in current day or anything like that, they can never like turn it off. It always seems like an issue where you just can't turn it off. But this time they had no problem just deactivating it. Like, oh shit, we don't need to blow up the ship. All right, cool. So yeah, I guess the reason why they had to, it was like a controlled thing. They had to shut down their master computer on this Bynar alien planet because there was like a solar flare or some sort of solar storm that was happening. And like, if they didn't shut it down, it was going to be destroyed or something like that. So they had to manually power it down. And to do that, you know, they would have to reboot it and then, I guess, copy over all the data back onto it. So they had to hijack the Enterprise to temporarily store all the data to then be able to reboot it into the master computer's hard drive. So, I mean, it was just a very big episode based around just like standard computer tech issues.
Yeah. It was interesting too, that they had it all planned out and then the Enterprise was late. And so it fucked everything up because they got delayed doing the thing that they were doing that I've already forgotten that they were doing. Because of that, it caused all that drama and stuff like that. And then They're like, why didn't you just ask for help? We would have totally helped you. And they're like, oh, well, we couldn't have chanced it.
Well, yeah, they're like, there's a chance you could have said no. We can't risk that kind of rejection. It reminded me of a very George McFly.
Response. I don't know if I could handle that kind of rejection.
But when you think about it from the binary point of view, there's like, there's yes and there's no. There's no maybe or there's no gray area. It's like yes or no. We can't take no for an answer, so I guess we're stealing the ship. We see the Enterprise leaving and going back, and the Bynar aliens, they're like, yes, we'll go back with you to the starbase and face whatever punishment comes, kind of thing. We never see them leave the ship. We never see them beam back down to their planet or anything. So it's like, do they take them back to the starbase? Are they actually performing any kind of upgrades on the Enterprise? Are they going to be punished for their crimes? All these unanswered questions.
Yeah, I think they'll get a happy ending. I mean, yeah, they're because, saving their species, so I mean,
yeah,
it makes and sense.
Picard even summed it up at the end, like, well, you know, you guys were able to save your planet, save your species, and we got our ship back and nobody got hurt, so I guess all's well. But, you know, but you could have asked. I don't know. I think we can go ahead and dive right into the ratings here, because I feel like we all pretty much have a good handle on how we enjoyed the episode. I'll switch things off and I'll go ahead and start, and then that way maybe it'll get a little bit unpredictable. I'm going to give this one a yay. I enjoyed it, mostly because of the Riker moments. I am madly in love with that character, and I think he's fantastic. And it was just an overall fun episode, and I didn't really think that anything brought it down. My own little gripes about cheesy sci-fi naming stuff notwithstanding, I still really, really enjoyed the episode. So I'm a solid yay. Who wants to go next?
I'll go. I enjoyed it. I guess I should say I didn't hate it. That's probably better. And if I don't hate it, then it's not a nay. I very much love Riker. He's my favorite crew member on the Enterprise. He's a lot of fun, and we definitely got our dose of Riker in this episode. I did like when Data took charge and immediately evacuated the ship. He's like, you know, fuck this, we're getting everybody off. I don't care. I'm in charge now. This is my ship, and I'm gonna destroy it in 2 seconds. So let's everyone evacuate. And I thought that was really cool. Like, there was a moment where a leader needed to step up, and he was next in command, and he did. He didn't think twice about it. He didn't have any like moral quandaries. He just knew that we had to get everyone to safety, and I think that's important, and I don't think we talked about it. So I do think that was a real moment for Data to shine, and it was unfortunate when they found out that Picard and Riker were not safe. You know, they were ready to go back, and then you know, Picard number two, he told them, Mr. Mandelbaum Jr. told them, no, you can't. It's not enough time.
Yeah, and there was a great moment where Data was kind of beating himself up, like, had I not wasted time, like, trying to do this painting, maybe I could have been there to figure out that Riker and Picard, you know, didn't evacuate, and I could have helped save them. So it's like, if they would, if they died, it would have been on his robot conscience, you know?
Right. Survivor's guilt, as it were.
Totally.
For a robot, yeah. Pretty crazy.
Yeah, and I think that was a real kind of cool human moment for Data in this one.
Absolutely. So I'm a yay.
Yeah, and I think that my vote doesn't matter at all. I'm also a yay.
Sorry.
I wanted you to go next, Justin, just in case you were an A, and I could be the tiebreaker. But I like these characters. We got a lot of character stuff in this episode that I really, really liked. I love the Data stuff. You know, you guys just talked about it. You know, I like that. You know, while he doesn't have human emotions, you know, the ability to second guess yourself is not a human thing. And you know, I'm sure he ran all the probabilities in his head and stuff like that. And deep down knew he made the right choice, but you know, just kind of needed that reaffirmation. The Riker of it all, we already talked about that, how much I loved that. And in the end, it was a fun story. It was these aliens willing to risk everything to save their people. You know, were they stupid aliens? Yeah, it was a stupid title. Yeah, but you know, the story was good. You know, what would you do to save your entire species? And you know, they had to outwit, you know, the Enterprise, the most technologically advanced ship in Starfleet. You know, it my only small gripe would be it was a completely no harm, no foul thing. You know, this first season of Next Generation is very, very much black and white. You know, everything has this happy, rosy ending at the end. I think it might be a product of its time. You know, I don't think people are ready for science fiction with consequences. I think that comes up in a couple seasons. But for now, I liked what I had. I was entertained the whole time, so it is a solid yay for me.
I just want to point out one more observation that Counselor Troi was not in this episode, and it seems that they write her character out of episodes where mind-reading abilities would really be able to help the plot. Like, had she been able to read these binars and realize, hey, these guys are going to steal a ship. I can read their mind. This is what they're saying. You know,
that is a good observation.
Yeah, it's interesting because there's been at least one or two other times where she just wasn't in the episode. And had we had somebody on the bridge that had the ability to read people's minds, all the conflict would have been resolved before it even started. So it's just kind of interesting. Now that I've named it and pointed my finger at it, let's see if that continues, if that's a trend. Whenever she's absent, she could have prevented whatever shit went down. So I'm curious to see if that plays out.
I'm curious to see how she would have read them to begin with, since they do think differently. I wonder if it would have been foggy for her or if she would have been perceptive, since they are so yes-no mentality. I'm curious if that would be easier for her to read or harder for her to read.
Well, because they kind of like finish each other's sentences and they go kind of go staccato back and forth between them to complete a full sentence, it's like she would have to read the minds of two of them to get a complete thought out.
Right. Otherwise, you know, she'd be 50-50% chance of being wrong.
Right. I think it would have been really interesting if, you know, if you would have supplemented Picard for Troi in that that whole jazz bar scene. That could have been a very interesting dichotomy between those two characters. And that would have also given them a reason to get her off the bridge, you know, because she can't read a computer. You know, she can't. She, you know, I guess we understand why the writers did it. You know, it's kind of like why Scooby-Doo and Buffy and all of them just don't have cell phones, because everything can be fixed everything can be fixed with a cell phone now.
The car, Buffy walks everywhere.
Yeah, and so it makes sense. And until you had mentioned it, I didn't even dawn on me, because so many people were leaving the ship.
It would have been interesting though had she been in there in the holodeck, because I don't think Will would have been acting the way around that program that he was if he ever had any thought of ever kind of like trying to win Troi back. I'm into it. I'm stepping in what you're spitting, but at the same time, I don't know if Riker would be willing to risk something that he would, because if he ever got back together with Troi, I understand that it would probably be something serious, and we all know that is ultimately the future that does happen. But I have to imagine that he probably wouldn't, like, you know, take out his swinging dick and just try to score with any old person in front of her just to, like, make her jealous or something. That just feels weird to me. So for me, it worked that it was Picard because it was like his wingman.
Yeah.
For a moment, like Dave saying, it looked like they were both going to get lucky. Picard was going to get his head polished. Speaking of which, we are at 6 yays and 8 nays now. So we are closing that gap once again. We're getting close. So I'm curious to see how the yays are going to fare over the next few episodes. The next one we've got next week is called Too Short a Season. And it's rated 6.1 stars, so almost a full 1.5 stars under where this one was. And the blurb is, the Enterprise transports an elderly Starfleet admiral to negotiate a hostage crisis. When the admiral takes a de-aging drug, he endangers both his life and the mission. So,
do we know who the admiral is?
I do not, unless I click on the episode. I don't know if I want to learn too much. I don't think it's anybody familiar from the original series, if that's what you're thinking.
Well, I know. Yeah, I was just curious because I know Scotty shows up, but he's stuck in like a transporter beam, and that's the later season. And right. We already had DeForest Kelly's McCoy, and he doesn't show up again. Obviously, Shatner never appears. Just trying to think who else.
Well, cool. Yeah, thanks, guys. This was a fun one. I want to thank all of you who took the time out of your busy day to listen to Geek Legacy's Escape Pod. And if you liked our fun, geeky ramblings, you're definitely going to want to take a listen to the Geek Legacy podcast proper, where we talk about all things geek-related with a healthy dose of Star Wars and a little bit of Star Trek in there. So check us out and be sure to come back next week when we look like we're growing into what's probably going to be a nay episode from the look of that rating over there on IMDb. But who knows? Maybe we'll fall in love with it. And you never know what Next Generation is going to offer. And for all of you who are watching this with us as we break these episodes down one by one, you are a true trooper because, man, I wouldn't necessarily recommend doing what we're doing. So we're doing it so you don't have to. And then you can just watch the good ones, the ones that we like. But for those of you that are watching all of them with us, keep soldiering on because it gets better. And thanks again, and we will talk to you next week.